Good morning and welcome to an Aloha Friday on The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich, and good morning to you, Chris Vandercook.
Good morning, Beth Ann. It's good to be reminded that one person can make a difference.
One person, and one person in concert with another person and another person, and so it goes.
Exactly.
Now, in the summer of 2013, Patrice Cullors was devastated by the verdict of not guilty in the trial of George Zimmerman for the killing of Trayvon Martin. She cried, she took to social media, and was galvanized by a post from a friend that ended Black Lives Matter. It instantly became a hashtag, then a movement. Now, 3.5 years later, the movement, which she co-founded, is continuing to redefine itself. Patrice Cullors is in Honolulu for the screening and panel discussion of Ava DuVernay's film 13th this morning. Patrice Cullors is in our studio, and welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We live now in a very changed political climate. Right after Donald Trump's election, you wrote in The Guardian expressing your fear and sadness and anger in an opinion piece. And you said that your work has become clearer and harder. How is that work evolving now?
Well, we're in a moment where we've seen over 23 executive orders from the Trump presidency. Those executive orders have threatened the lives of undocumented people, immigrant communities, Black people, women. And we're also seeing a resistance movement. We're seeing organizations and movements join together to say enough is enough. We will not allow this presidency to deter us. And I think as much as it's devastating, there is a significant amount of beauty.
Does that also speak to the idea that we are in a point where it's moving into the all lives matter, which has taken a lot of, you know, hits and criticism from Black Lives Matter as being aspirational, but not necessarily truly, you know, practical in terms of what the movement itself was trying to do. But in this moment of what you see as more collaboration, is it moving into that sphere?
Well, what we've seen All Lives Matter be used for is to derail a conversation about anti-Black racism. When I say our movements are joining together, I don't mean that we're diluting the messages of each movement and the specificities of our oppression. In fact, I think our movements are joining together to say each one of us, our communities are being targeted in this specific way. We have more strength as a unit than we do separately.
For that joining together of movements, we've seen Black Lives Matter blossom over the last 3.5 years around the country and around the world. Where and how is Black Lives Matter moving in those places to coalesce with other communities? Which communities are you, in fact, coalescing with?
Yeah, on the mainland, you're seeing the immigrants' rights community and Black Lives Matter join together. We're also seeing there be a more specific conversation about how anti-Black racism exists even in the immigrants' rights movement. Right. There's this idea that Black folks aren't actually undocumented, but that's not true. We have people from the Caribbean. We have people from the continent of Africa, from Sudan, from Somali, who are being deeply impacted by this moment, doubly impacted by the Muslim ban and by anti-Black racism and the policing of our communities. So you're seeing that connection. You're also seeing groups in our community, like the LGBT community, joining together, the women's rights movement that's bubbling and blossoming in this moment. And you're seeing us develop new relationships with people outside of the U.S. borders, folks inside Canada and the United Kingdom. Everybody sees Donald Trump as a threat to their existence, not just in our country, but also across the world.
We're also being watched by the rest of the world, too, not just by those who are involved with the movement, but by nations. Has there been any conversation that you've been able to glean from those who are in the movement around the country about how, and around the world, about how the view toward America is changing differently from what we see turn up in news streams?
I think what we are seeing is that folks from other nations clearly understand that that the U.S. is being led in a way that is in direct contradiction from many people on the ground. The moment that Donald Trump was elected, people hit the streets. That is incredibly powerful. The day of his inauguration, people were protesting. Black Lives Matter, our D.C. chapter, and the movement for Black Lives inside of D.C. Were protesting at his inauguration in collaboration with environmental justice groups. The day after was the Women's March, which was some of the largest numbers of people coming out on the streets across the globe. You're seeing global resistance to Donald Trump.
You've characterized the way he wants to rule the country as being, you know, a police state and a state of law and order. In looking at it through that lens, is there any way of being able to see police reform?
That's a really good question. I think what we know is that the fight has to be local. There's going to be very little movement on holding police accountable at the federal level, where we had the DOJ during the Obama administration that was coming in and really challenging local law enforcement. That's not going to happen during this presidency. And so the work that we are really pushing for is both cities and counties, but also states, like my state in California, who has been hugely oppositional to Donald Trump and really his cabinet. And we've seen deep movement in the state of California, as well as the city of Los Angeles, where we're saying, this is a sanctuary city, this is a sanctuary state. And I think we're going to need to request more cities, more states to stand up against the rise of Donald Trump and his administration's push and move towards a police state.
We know that some of that conversation is happening within Hawaii, about Hawaii being a sanctuary state. In talking to those of Black Lives Matter who are operational here in Hawaii, what are you hearing from them in terms of pushing the conversation in a way that perhaps we are not hearing beyond just, oh, this is something that may be occurring in Hawaii?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two threads of the conversation that I've been paying attention to. One is the conversation that's being led by many Black Hawaiians, both who are mixed race but also have lived here, which is Black Lives Matter in the Hawaiian Kingdom. I've been able to have informal and formal conversations with folks who think it's so important to talk about anti-Black racism in this context. The other thread that I've been paying attention to is the Hawaiian sovereignty movement. There are Black folks and Native Hawaiian folks, both groups who have been fighting for the liberation of their communities for centuries. I think those are important moments to have conversations where there are similarities, but also have the conversation where there are differences in our movements.
Hawaii likes to think of itself as being so culturally embracing in its diversity, and yet we know that there are tensions that exist here too. You've just talked about some of them. But are there ways in which you see Hawaii being able to do this better? I mean, we like to think of ourselves as a beacon. Are we?
I don't live here, so I think from an outside vantage point, I think definitely a place like Hawaii can lead both the conversation but also the practice around what it means to be in community, what it means to be in direct relationship with one another. I think part of what that takes is a deep involvement in why we should be joining our movement at this moment. Many of us are scared. We are frightened. Sometimes what that does, it moves us to isolate, right, or further exist in silos. I think right now, with even myself and Alicia coming in later, we have this weekend to talk about and deepen our relationships with one another.
Hawaii has also had a sometimes, you know, frustrated and indifferent relationship with its LGBTQ community. Sometimes it's been very progressive. Sometimes people have shrugged their shoulders and wondered, how could we be talking about this and not acting further? Mm. And yet, you know, we've seen a forward motion. There's also the host culture and a very different approach. How, in that context of conversation and joining together, with some of the threads that you see coming from the Black Lives Matter movement. Do you see that part of the conversation going forward?
Mm-hmm. Well, the LGBTQ community, you know, with Black Lives Matter, two of its founders being queer, openly queer, we've had deep conversations with the LGBT community, often led by the mainstream movement, led by white folks, and why the mainstream LGBTQ movement really needs to think about anti-Black racism and be in better practice with Black communities and communities of color. I think oftentimes when you see tensions, you're seeing a tension around power struggle. People will say, well, you know, talking about LGBTQ issues are a distraction from the real issues. In fact, what we're pushing for is a conversation of those folks who are at the margins. If you're Black, if you're queer, if you're Black and you're trans, you're at the margins. And so how do we have a more intersectional approach to these conversations?
And what does that intersectional approach look like?
It looks like talking about all the ways someone comes inside of this movement. I'm Black, I'm queer, raised working class and poor. We have to have these conversations, and we have to actually center those that are most at the margin in these conversations. If we're just talking about white LGBT communities, we're not actually talking about the ways in which Black, queer, and trans women in particular are subjected to some of the most violent recourse by not just law enforcement, but by civilians as well. And so I think that's a conversation that we really try to challenge people on.
When you talk about those who are marginalized, what comes to mind too are also people who have been leading in the movement for decades, who have been pushed away from the spotlight, mm-hmm. which seems only to be occupied by, you know, guys. Why is it that it seems to be so full of not just paternalism but sexism when there are so many women who throughout movements have been the ones to lead it?
Because we haven't got rid of sexism, and we haven't been able to get rid of patriarchy, and because many people, both men and women alike, are deeply invested in patriarchy and sexism without even realizing it. We come from a long line of women who have been the architects of the movement, like Ella Baker, like Fannie Lou Hamer. We've come from a long line of women who have been on the front lines of this movement, and yet, time and time again, the people who get the visibility and the spotlight are Black men. In this current moment, we are seeing a different approach. Because of social media, Black women have the opportunity to share why we are at the front lines of this movement, why we are the architects. And we are in some of the people who have lifted us up the most have been our elders that are Black women, like Barbara Ransby and Kathy Cohen and Linda Burnham.
This seems to say that Black Lives Matter has both an internal focus in bringing a conversation that is truly representative of the people in it, and led by women, not just by the Al Sharptons of the world, mm-hmm. but also the fact that you're now having to operate, I don't want to call it a war on two fronts, but it seems very much that you have very different and bifurcated focuses on this because you have to be able to bring this together to a point where you can make it work in the way that you see.
I'd agree with you. I think there's always been an age-old struggle of power inside of the civil rights movement and the human rights movement. Who gets to tell the story? Who gets to be on the at the forefront of the story? Who gets to shape the debate and the dialogue? I think the difference now is there's a much more even playing field. I won't say that we've been able to rid patriarchy and sexism in our communities. That would be a lie. But you do get to see women voices, queer voices, trans voices that are shaping the debate and the narrative in ways that you didn't see in the past.
Well, we're glad that we also have been able to share your voice this morning. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Patrice Cullors is the co-founder of Black Lives Matter. She's also a performance artist, Fulbright scholar, and NAACP history maker. She was named by the Los Angeles Times as the civil rights leader of the 21st century. Patrice Cullors is in Honolulu for the screening of 13th and the panel discussion that will follow this Sunday at the Doris Duke Theater.